All right, as we wrap up our series on relationship goals, I want to take just a moment because I kind of got distracted during the announcements. I forgot to tell you about our series for next week. And so I wanted to just share with you because I'm really excited about this series. Those of you that grew up that are my age, around my age group, do you remember the WWJD bracelets? You remember those? I think they may still be around. It's like, what would Jesus do, right? And the whole idea behind it is, you know, if somebody's mean to you and you want to be mean back, it's like, okay, what would Jesus do? Or if somebody's, you know, somebody's like hurting and you're like, well, I just want to tell them to suck it up, buttercup. You're like, okay, what would Jesus do? And it was this whole idea, which sounds great, right? What would Jesus do? But you know, one of the things that's interesting, do you remember playing the telephone game when you were a kid and you would sit in a circle and you would whisper something in somebody's ear and they would repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and then it came around back to you? It was supposed to be the same thing, but it was never like the same thing at all. And I'm going to be honest with you, I was the kid that was sitting there. If you told me, like, hey, Grandpa has 5 dogs, I'd look at the person next to me and go, Grandpa has 17 feline cats or something, because I wanted to mess it up because I thought it was hysterical in doing that, right? Because that's just kind of the way I am. But what's interesting is that, you know, we have some history to go by about what Jesus would do. And what's interesting is that when Jesus showed up on the scene 2,000 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot of things that Jesus did that were unique and different, but there were a whole lot of things that Jesus undid. And what's interesting is that there was a lot of things that came to religion, that came to practice, that came to how the people taught, how the people believed, that Jesus goes, yeah, that's not right. We're going to change that. And so this series is really going, okay, we're going to go back and we're going to ask the question, instead of what would Jesus do, what would Jesus undo? If Jesus showed up in the world today, in the church of 2024, what would Jesus go, yeah, that's not right. We need to fix that. We need to change that. And so I'm just excited about that because I really think that there's a lot of things that we kind of understand or accept and say, yeah, that's the way Jesus would do it, that if we look at what the scripture says, we're like, ooh, maybe we're not quite on task there and be able to do that. So I encourage you next week as we start that. So today, we're wrapping up this series, Relationship Goals. And we've said that there are really 4 things that I want to encourage you, all of you that are either married or maybe you're engaged or maybe you're single. And so instead of relationship goals, this is life goals for you. Like, hey, how do I want to live my life? And so we give you kind of 4 phrases. The first phrase was the fact that you want to be Christ-centered. And Christ-centered is different than being Christian, right? Christ-centered means everything at the center of everything that you do is Jesus Christ. And so you base everything around that. It's not a part of your life. He is your life. So Christ-centered, mission-driven, devil-kicking, covenant-keeping marriage. That's what we want you to have. And so instead of going, okay, here there's 17 things that you need to do, we're like each week going, okay, there's a first step. Just do the first step. Get the first step moving in the right direction. So the idea of being a Christ-centered marriage is, listen, Christ-centered couples pray together every day. Christ-centered couples pray together every day. So if you've been a part of this series, I hope that you've been doing that. I hope you've been praying with each other. And if you miss a day, just don't miss 2. Just make sure that you're doing that. Christ-centered couples pray together every single day. And then mission-driven, we talk about the fact that marriage, the perfect marriage isn't about happiness, it's about unity, being on the same page. So that first step is, what is your mission as a married couple? If somebody goes, hey, why are you guys married? And your only answer is, well, because we kind of love each other. It's like, okay, but what is your goal? What are you trying to accomplish in your marriage? Why are you even married? Don't maybe ask that way. But like, ask it. What is the purpose? Why are you together as a marriage? And the devil kicking last week, and I just kind of like that, you know, because it's the idea that fighting in marriage is inevitable. It's going to happen. The question is, are you fighting for each other? Are you fighting against each other or at each other? And the idea is, the first step is, instead of saying, what are my rights, you ask, what is my responsibility? Because it's not about your rights. It's about what you're supposed to do as a husband or a wife in marriage. And so today, we're going to put a nice little bow on it. And quite frankly, it may actually change your entire thought process on what marriage is supposed to be. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start with just a little quiz. For those of you that are married, how many of you married somebody that in one, at least one major area, it doesn't have to be in every area, but at least in one major area is the exact opposite of you? Okay. See? Do you notice that? Notice almost every married couple has their hands up, right? Why? Because when you're dating, opposites attract, right? You're like, oh, this is so great. And then you get married, and when you're married, opposites attack. Because that's what happens, right? You're like, why aren't you more like me? Well, you thought it was cute before we were married. And so we process all these things. It's like, you know, what, somebody who's punctual marries somebody who's, and we'll just use the word flexible, right? Somebody who's punctual marries somebody who's flexible. Somebody who's creative, we'll just put it that way, marry somebody who's organized and loves spreadsheets. Somebody who is a spender marries someone who is a saver. Someone who loves flat pancakes marries someone who loves thick pancakes. Have you ever had a food argument in your household about how it's made? Listen, guys, can I just say one thing to you? Don't ever say, well, the way that my mom used to make it, that, you will lose that argument every time. Just don't even go there. You see, before you're married, you say things like this. It is so relaxing how laid back they are. I mean, it's refreshing to me how laid back they are. And then you get married, and that turns into, stop being such a lazy bum. Get up and do something. Before you're married, you say things like, I love how spontaneous they are. They're so spontaneous. And I hear the groans all across. I love how spontaneous they are. And then you're married and you're like, can you just be on time one time in your life for something and stick to some semblance of a plan in some way, shape, or form? Before you're married, you say things like, it's so cute when she gets angry. After you're married, it's not so cute anymore, is it? What happens is that if you're focused on being happy, right? Because that's the bill of goods that we're sold, right? Happiness, that's the key. That's the key. You got to be happy. And if you're not happy, and if you make it about your rights, if you believe that marriage is nothing more than a contract, then it's going to look like this. We're in love. We're in divorce court. That's what happens. Because you're focusing on the wrong thing and you're believing that marriage is something that it isn't. Now, I want to just really quickly, if you're here this morning and you've lost a marriage, okay, you've gone through a divorce, and I'm not going to say, well, it's this or it's that. No. Here's what I want to say to you this morning. I want to encourage you to stop looking backwards. Because God doesn't call us to look backwards. Because you cannot fix the past, you cannot alter the past, you cannot change the past. But today and your future is available for you, and that starts today. For you to be able to make the changes that you need to make. And I'm not even saying that that person may not be an option for you guys to reconcile. I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying you need to stop looking backwards, because if you keep looking backwards and you move forwards and you're not looking forwards, guess what you're going to do? You're going to keep running into stuff. And it's going to keep causing you problems and problems and problems. And so today, if you've never done it before, today make the choice. Okay, I'm done looking back. I'm going to begin looking forward. I'm done blaming. I'm done accusing. I'm going to start making the changes that I need to make today. And so that's my encouragement to you if you've gone through a loss in marriage. If you're not married yet, then boy, today is really the day to go, okay, I'm going to change my mindset on what marriage really is all about, so that when the opportunity arises, I'm going to go into this with eyes wide open, ready to do what God has for me to do. So we're going to begin in Matthew chapter 19, because I want to show you that this idea of us wanting to kind of define marriage in our own terms was not new. This idea of trying to create marriage as something that's easily escapable, it's something that's disposable, it's not new. It's been around for thousands of years. Matthew chapter 19, Jesus was teaching, and some of the Pharisees, and by the way, the Pharisees, these are the religious leaders, okay? These are the pastors. These are the teachers of the law. They come to Jesus to test him, and they ask, and notice what they ask. Is it lawful? In fact, I know that I think it's bolded on your notes, but circle that because it's so important. You see, a lot of times, this is exactly what we do, and not just about marriage, but is it lawful? Can I get away with it without getting in trouble with the law? That's our mindset. And that's not, God says, listen, that's not how it's supposed to be. It's not about is it lawful, it's about is it the right thing to do? And so they begin with this. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? So here's the thing. In that day and age, it was very male-oriented, right? It was all about the guys had their rights and the women had like no rights or very little rights. In fact, the Jewish culture was probably the most liberated when it comes to that mindset because women could own property and all these different things. A lot of other places in the world, that wasn't the reality. But there was this thing, this law, that basically if a husband got mad enough, he could look at his wife and he could say, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you, three times. So right, one, two, three, and they were divorced. That was it. And for any reason whatsoever, you're like, oh, you burned my steak three times in a row. I divorce you, I divorce you. Next time. Just saying. Like, literally, that was kind of the way that it was set up at that point in time. So they ask him, hey, is this right? And I love his reply. Haven't you read? At the beginning, the Creator God made them male and female. So he sets the tone. He goes, listen, y'all looking at this wrong. So you've got this from this male-oriented mindset that the guy has all the rights, but God created humanity as male and female as equal but different. So this is not about, you guys have got this all wrong to begin with. And then he continues and said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become, and what's the next two words? One flesh. The two will become one flesh. It's not like, lucky you, woman, you got to get married to this guy. No, no, no. It's the two. It's a union between two people become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let man not separate. You see, this isn't new. This is not a new thing. This has been around forever. And it's the same way today. We create laws, right, that attempt to redefine marriage into something that fits our desires or our agendas. But Jesus makes it very clear. Listen, it's not about your laws because your laws didn't create what marriage is. I created what marriage is, and here's what God says. Our culture tends to look at marriage as a contract. In fact, you may have even heard that phrasing, the marriage contract. Have you ever heard that before? Now, let me ask you, have you ever been in a contract that you loved? Think about it. The most prominent contract is probably your telephone contract, your cell phone contract. How many of you, after a year, like, you get the contract, like, oh, this is so exciting. I have a brand new iPhone 15. It's the max. I carry it like this. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. I can watch TV. It's bigger than my TV screen. It's wonderful. And I'm just waiting for the one that comes out with four folds, so it's like, oh, my phablet, right? A year later, you're like, man, I am so tired of this contract. I'm ready to be done with this. I want to get out of it. You buy a new car. You enter into a contract. And it's a 17-year commitment because you can't afford the payments of the $79,000 truck that you had to have to drive your kids back and forth from school because four-wheel drive is so necessary and the hyped-up tires are so necessary for that. And so you buy all this, and you're like, you're driving around, and you're like, everyone is so jealous of me. And then 6 months later, after seven payments of $845 a month, that's probably more than your house payment, you're going, this was a bad idea, because that's what contracts do. Contracts force you to stay in it. Is that how you see marriage? Because that's how our world defines it. And when you're in a contract, what do you want to do? I want to find the loophole so that I can get out. And we see that all the time with marriage. They look for the loophole. God says, okay, marriage isn't a contract. Do you know that God never uses the term contract when it comes to marriage? He uses a different term. and it's probably not a term that you're familiar with, it's the term covenant. Now, sometimes it's used today, it's like a homeowners association covenant. That's a contract, I'm just saying. And you'll see why, because a covenant is very different than a contract. So let me just give you an idea of what these covenants are. A covenant is between two equal parties. It's contract is never between two equal parties. One person has the power and the other person doesn't. That's a contract. And you sign that contract and you are held to that. A covenant is two equal parties having equal privileges but also equal responsibilities. That's a covenant. In fact, the Hebrew word for covenant means to literally bond permanently together. You ever glued your fingers together with super glue? You ever tried to peel them apart? Like, I remember years and years and years ago, I was doing something, and I had my fingers on the super glue, and I was being super careful, and I was doing all that stuff. And I went to put the super glue down, and it wouldn't leave my hand. There was a hole in the side of the metal super glue container. I've always wondered why it's metal, probably because it'll eat through everything else. And my fingers literally had fused to the super glue. And I'm trying to peel it off, and as I'm peeling it off, I'm grabbing it with my other hand, foolishly not thinking, and then what happens is my other thumb then fused to the side of it. And if you're old enough to remember Br'er Rabbit, I felt like the tar baby, right? I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do next, and I'm just sitting there like this. And so I'm running under the water, I'm putting all sorts of stuff on it. Tracy's got the goof off or whatever, and we're pouring it over. And finally I peel it off, but not after losing multiple layers of skin. That is literally why divorce hurts. Because when you're married, you are fused together as one. And so when it's torn apart, it causes damage to both sides. That's why it's important to understand this idea of covenant. It is not the same as contract. There's rarely ever any joy, even if there might be some relief because there's been pressure or frustration or pain or hurt that's taken with that, the long distance and the long-term hurt is still there. Why? Because you've been fused together as one. And that's this idea of covenant. So the idea here is, and what Jesus is saying is, don't un-one what God has made one. Don't do that. Because covenant is different than relationship. So here's the first step. And again, I don't give you a whole bunch of steps, because if I give you a whole bunch of steps, the idea that you'll do more than one is probably not reality anyways. You probably won't do any. So I'll give you one simple thing. And here it is. Here's the first step. Change your mindset from contract to covenant. Change your mindset from contract to covenant. It's a completely different way of thinking. And I'll give you some of the ways that we can change that, okay? Ways we can think about that. So a contract, if you think contract, a contract is based upon mutual distrust. A contract is based upon mutual distrust. You go, well, I don't know about that. Let me just give you some of the language that's used in a contract, right? If you don't do X, this happens. There's that trigger clause that takes place. Why do you have to have a trigger clause if somebody doesn't hold up their end of the bargain? Because you don't trust them. You don't believe that they're going to hold their end of the bargain. And so because you don't trust them, you have to have a contract that forces them to follow and do their end of the bargain. It is filled with all these if-then statements. If you do this, then I will do this. If you pay this, then I will offer this thing. If you make this, then I will do this. That's the idea of a contract. And if you have a mindset in marriage of a contract, then you're constantly going to be having these if-then statements. If you treat me well, then I will treat you well. If you make things this way, then I will do things this way. If you this, then I this. That's contract thinking. Here's covenant thinking. A covenant isn't based on mutual distrust. A covenant is based on mutual commitment. You both commit to doing something. It's not an if-then statement. It's not if you do this, then I will do this. It's regardless of what you do, I will do this. It's mutual commitment to one another. You enter into a covenant not expecting to get, but promising to give. You go, I'm not sure I buy that. Let's just go back through the vows, right? Do the vows go like this? If you love me, I will love you. If you take care of me, then I'll take care of you. If you make sure that the grass is mowed, I'll make sure that there's you know, food on the table. If you take out the trash, I'll wash your clothes. If you make so much money, then I will make so much money. If you take care of the electric bill, I'll take care of the water bill. I vow to honor and to love and to cherish. See, that those are not if-then statements. That's not contractual language. That's covenant language. That's saying, regardless of what you do. Now, I know some of you are like, yeah, but wait. We'll get there. Regardless of what you do, I will love you, and I will honor you, and I will cherish you. And then how do those vows end? Till what? Till death do us part. You're like, well, I can do that. See, a vow promises to give something. A contract looks for the way out of having to do something. It's very different. It doesn't go, as long as she doesn't gain too much weight, and as long as he doesn't snore too loud, then we will stay in this. That's contractual language. That's not covenant mindset. So that's the first one. Second one is this. A contract, it limits my liability. It limits my liability, but it increases my protections. One of the things that we like to do when we go on vacation is we don't typically stay in hotels. We typically stay in VRBOs, right? Where it's vacation rental by owner, I think is the acrostic. And so we'll go to a house that has a couple of bedrooms and different things like that. And the reason that we do that is because it tends to be actually in the long run be cheaper than actually getting a hotel room. And we don't have to be in the same room as our kids. Just, you know, that's just the way that it was when they were younger, especially. We're like, okay, we want some space. You go over there and we're going to lock our door and you can just hang over there. We just want to enjoy our space. And so you would do that. But here's interesting. When you do a VRBO, there's a contract. And usually a part of that contract is you have to get renter's insurance. You familiar with this? And you pay like a certain fee. And the whole idea of the contract in the renter's insurance is that if something happens, I'm not liable. I don't have to pay for it. Now, the owner still gets paid. And they get the money for the broken dishwasher or the pool that now has a leak or whatever. But I'm not held liable anymore. And see, that, if you have that mindset in marriage, you're constantly looking to not be held liable for the things you've done. And you constantly look to blame the other spouse because it's contractual. And if more liability is on their side than on your side, you can tell your friends and you're no longer held responsible for the divorce and the breakup because it was more their fault than it was yours. That's contractual thinking. Covenant thinking releases my rights and it expands my responsibility. I know we touched on it last week, and I told you that we were going to hit it more today, but this idea of my rights has ruined so many marriages. And it often is, sometimes it's not even stated out loud. It's just this internal conversation. I have a right to, I have a right to. This is my right, my right, my right. And it's this internal conversation. Sometimes it percolates and bubbles over the top and you say it out loud and then your spouse often responds with, well, it's my right. And so there's this rights thing. That's contractual thinking. Covenant thinking doesn't focus on your rights. It focuses on your responsibilities. Now, here's the thing. You go, but, I'm not happy. I'm not happy. Again, marriage isn't about happiness. You're like, I know. No. It's about unity, right? It's about being on the same page. And when you find that, you find something that's better than happiness. You find this joy and this excitement. You go, yeah, but I don't trust him. But I don't love her. A covenant mindset challenges you to stop pointing the finger and start pondering your failure and your shortcomings, because you made a covenant to do something for them in spite of what they do, in sickness and in health, whether you are rich or poor, till death do you part. That's covenant thinking. So if you want to really drastically change the culture in your marriage, you need to move from a contract mindset to covenant thinking. Stop looking to blame your spouse and go, well, you. You know what? You know how amazing it is to find the problems with your spouse? You know how easy that is? Can I be honest? Can we just be honest about that? If I said to you, do me a favor, every one of you, list the top five things that irritate you about your spouse. You're like, just five? Would you like it in alphabetical order? Would you like it in a haiku? I can do it in a haiku. Would you like everything to rhyme? I can make it all work. Because it's not hard, especially when your mind is focused on finding things wrong with them. It's really easy. But in covenant thinking, instead of constantly looking for the wrong in them, you take accountability for your own actions. Instead of constantly looking for the faults in them, you have to ask yourself, what am I doing? Am I fulfilling my side of the covenant in my relationship? And I know that's hard. We started this whole series off with marriage is, it's hard. It is the most difficult relationship that you will ever cultivate in your entire life. But marriage absolutely is something that needs to be cultivated. So I want to ask you a really simple question. What are you planting and where are you planting? And I want to phrase that by reading to you Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 through 9. Don't be misled. God cannot be mocked. You cannot mock the justice of God. In other words, God will always repay what you've done. He will always reward either the good or the bad that you've done and how you've handled yourself, what you've planted in your life. You will always harvest what you plant. If you plant a pear seed, you are not going to get a raspberry bush. It doesn't work that way. Those who live only to satisfy their own sinful nature. Now think about that. That is contract thinking. It's all about me. What am I going to get out of it? Am I being upheld the way I'm supposed to be? Are my rights being taken care of? If your mindset is all about your own selfish desires, you will harvest decay and death from that sinful nature. If you want your marriage to die a slow or really rapid death, keep thinking about yourself, because that is exactly what will happen. But those who live to please the Spirit will harvest everlasting life from the Spirit. So, let's not get tired of doing what is good. At just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing if we don't give up. So, two questions for you. What are you planting in your marriage? What are you planting in your marriage? Give you an idea of what I'm talking about here. If you and I passed each other on the street, and maybe you're having a bad day. I don't see if you're having a bad day or not. I don't know. I can't tell. Maybe you've got a walk that lets everyone know you're having a bad day. Some of you are like that. You're like, you can see a bad day a mile away. But you're walking down the street, and I see you, and I go, hi, and I smile. What am I planting? Right? I'm planting happiness. I'm planting, oh, hey. And oftentimes, even if you're having a bad day, if somebody smiles at you, it may not be a real smile, but you kind of force it back. You're like, eh. But if you walk by me and I flip you the bird. What am I planting? Maybe something not so great. You're like, bah, right? Ah. You see, what are you planting? What are you planting in your marriage? Are you planting the possibility of joy? Are you planting the possibility of happiness? Are you planting the possibility of grace and thoughtfulness? Or are you planting criticism and controlling and complaining? And here's what's crazy. You plant all that stuff, and then you're surprised when it sprouts up. Well, how did that get here? Well, you planted it a few months ago, and here it is now. Enjoy your harvest. Now, I know. The response to this is usually, but I don't feel like being nice. I don't feel like forgiving. I don't feel like working on it. And I tell you this about once every 8 or 9 weeks, your feelings lie to you all the time. If you make decisions based upon your feelings, they will lead you down a path that you don't enjoy and you won't like and you won't relish later on in life, because feelings always lie to you, every single way, shape, and form. But the bigger thing is how many other areas in your life will this excuse actually work? Why aren't you feeding your baby? I don't feel like it. You may not have that baby for very long. I don't feel like it. Why aren't you going to work? I don't feel like it. Well, you're not going to have that job for very long. Well, why don't you pay your taxes? Well, I don't feel like it. You're not going to have your freedom for very long. It doesn't work. It's a terrible excuse, but it's the one we most often use in marriage. So not only what are you planting, but where are you planting? If I put an apple seed in the ground, and then I walk over here, and I sit and wait for the apple tree to grow up over here, y'all would think I was nuts. First of all, because I'm planting it into a wooden stage. But second of all, because I'm anticipating something showing up over here when I've been planting all the way over here. Where are you planting? Are you putting all your efforts in your hobbies? Are you putting all your efforts in your job or your work? Are you putting all your efforts in something else besides your marriage? Then why in the world would you expect a harvest and joy and happiness and fellowship and unity in your marriage if you're wasting all your planting ability over here? And by the way, the Bible says that God is your one and your spouse is your two, and nothing should be more important in this world than your spouse. That includes your kids. That's why so many marriages, when the kids leave the house, end. Because one of the spouses or both of the spouses have been planting all their seeds in the kids, and both spouses die on the vine. And can I just tell you something? Kids leave. I mean, eventually. They do. And it's just going to be the two of you in the house. Just the two of you. And you may both be dead on the vine by that point in time. If you've been planting everything over here. So what are you planting and where are you planting? Because the reality is at some point in time you're going to reap a harvest, because God's justice isn't mocked. His reward will always be there. And by the way, giving up doesn't mean just not getting divorced. Because I know a lot of marriages that have given up, but they still live in the same house. Giving up means you are not doing what it takes to be a Christ-centered, mission-driven, devil-kicking, covenant-keeping relationship with one another. You've just stopped trying. If you try and you work and you plant where you're supposed to plant and you plant what you're supposed to plant, then God says at some point in time, you will reap a harvest. And that harvest is going to be awesome intimacy, an amazing story with integrity that you can tell your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids if you live that long. Because the reality is that God doesn't ever fail on his promise if you are faithful to him. Now, those of you, as we kind of wrap this up, because I'm going to talk to married people here in just a moment, but I want to talk to those of you that are single or divorced, because this is very important for you. Because right now you might be going, it doesn't make really a connection with me. Stop that thought process right now. What I want you to do is I want you to make a covenant right now with God and with yourself. I want you to make a covenant right now with God and with yourself. And then you can even do this if you're like, well, someday I'd like to be married again, or I'd like to be married. Then you make the covenant with God, you make it with yourself, and you make it with your future spouse. You're like, well, who is my future spouse? Do you have some inside information? No. But you make that covenant now with them. You won't make mistakes with them when you do meet them. So make the covenant now. And here's what it should look like. You need to actually realize and understand how our society wants to change and drastically reduce what the idea of marriage is, because our society, it pressures and it pushes and it's permeated with the idea that marriage is a societal and social construct. And therefore, if marriage is a societal and cultural construct, then as society and culture changes, so does marriage. God created marriage, and if you want a Christ-centered, mission-driven, devil-kicking, covenant-keeping marriage someday, or a lifestyle, or a life today, you've got to lay the foundation now. If you want your someday to be great, you've got to start today. Because you cannot build a life of righteousness on a foundation of sinfulness. So honor God and honor yourself now. Here's what I mean by that. Don't get involved sexually before marriage. It doesn't lead to long-term happiness. You're like, but it feels good. Trust me, God made sex to feel good. Can I just be honest with you? He did. If it didn't, we wouldn't have any kids. Right? Right? But God says, you take that thing and you take it outside of marriage, and you know what it can become? Destructive and painful and hurtful and ruin everything. So don't do it. Number two, refuse the temptation to do the trial run. It's very popular right now, right? Do a trial run. Live together before marriage and see if you work together. See if it works. Do you know, by the way, not only does God say not to do this, but do you know that statistics actually tell you that's a bad idea? The great bastion of theological truth of UC Denver, right? Right. Whoa, there. Big time. No, they're about as left-leaning and ideological as you can think. They did this study, this multi-year study. Do you know what they found? That couples that live together before marriage have a 48% higher chance of divorce than those that don't. You are more than twice likely to get divorced if you live together before you don't. Last one. Don't just look at the outside appearance of the person that you think is cool. Because here, okay, this is, just listen, okay, for just a second. As a guy who has passed the 50 half century mark, do you know what happens when you get older? Those of you that are in your 20s, you're like, I feel so great and so wonderful. Let me just tell you, things start to droop and sag. Wrinkles show up in places you're like, I didn't know you could get wrinkly there. Beauty fades, and often fades quickly. If all you do is look at the outside appearance and you don't ask the question, do they love Jesus? You are setting yourself up for long-term failure. Now, you go, but I really like them. I really want them. I get it. Totally get it. Here's the thing, though. If they don't love Jesus, they're either not for you or they're not for you yet. God may still be working on them. And if you jump into the equation before God's done working on them, you short circuit God's working in their life and ultimately in your life. So don't just look at the outside. Resist the temptation of the trial run and avoid the idea of sexual intimacy before marriage, because none of that ever sets you up for God's best. So, those of you that aren't married yet, this next little bit, you can just kind of hang out with this. Those of you that are married, if your spouse is here, I'm going to ask you to do so. If you're part of the team up here, it's good. You can stay right where you are, okay? But if you and your spouse are here, I'm going to ask you to do something. And like some of you are like, oh, what is he going to do? Okay, just bear with me. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to stand up right now together, okay? And if you're not sitting together, if you've got kids in between you, move closer to each other. Honey, why don't you come up here? I want you to get right next to each other. You're like, I don't know that I want to stand up. I don't care. If you're married, stand up, okay? Just do it. Here's what I'm going to ask you to do, okay? Guys, I want you to, come here. Guys, I want you to do this. I want you to put your arm or your arms around your wife, however you want to do it, however you're comfortable with that. If I do that and Tracy's in front of me, I'll choke her, so I'm just going to, till death do us part. But here's what I want you to do. Because guys, you have a responsibility before God to lead your home as a Christ-centered, mission-driven, devil-kicking, and then, what's the last one? I think covenant-keeping, right? That's what we're talking about? Yeah, covenant-keeping marriage. So that's why I'm asking you to do that. And what I want to do is I want to pray for each of you right now, because I believe that every single marriage, even the ones that aren't great, you're just one or two changes away from being a marriage that's awesome and honors God. And we're going to pray that that happens today. Would you pray with me? Father God, we thank you so much for these couples that are here today. And God, we've made it really clear, marriage is hard. It's not an easy thing. It's a struggle sometimes. There are days that we love each other, but we may not like each other. But God, we are making that commitment to be in covenant relationship with each other. It's not about our rights. It's about us living up to our responsibilities. And so, God, I pray for every married couple here today. Maybe there was some disagreements that happened this morning, some fights that took place this week. Maybe there were some things that were said that shouldn't have been said. And I just pray in this moment, God, that you would begin to the healing process there. That they would be open, they would be honest with each other, they would be faithful to each other, and God, they would say, enough about this contractual stuff, enough about trying for me to be about my rights or my happiness, I'm just going to do for you what I have committed to do for you. I'm going to love you, I'm going to cherish you, I'm going to honor you, and I'm going to do it till one of us passes from this life to the next, because that is what I committed to, that is the covenant that I made. I'm going to do it from this point forward. And God, we know that when that happens, that we will reap a harvest of your blessing. And we thank you for that. And we pray this in Jesus' precious and holy name. Amen. You may be seated. I'm going to go ahead and ask the team to come on up. They're going to lead us in a couple of songs, one to respond and one just kind of end the morning with that celebration. So today, if you're sitting here and you're like, okay, that was a tough morning. I get it. But I want to tell you this. God is not a God who leaves us without hope. He doesn't. The Bible tells us that God loves you so very, very much that he sent his one and only son to die on the cross for you. And that his desire is that you would experience that joy of life and the fullness of life that God desires for you to experience. And right now, it may not feel like it. But remember, our feelings lie. So what I want to challenge you to do is, as we sing this next song, instead of thinking about how you feel, I want you to focus on who God really is. And I think the song we're singing is Fade Away. Is that right? Am I right on that? It's all this idea about all these things that we get worried about and stressed about and just kind of overwhelmed by. We just kind of let it all kind of fall off as we focus on who our great God is. So I'm going to encourage you to respond like that today. Even if you're frustrated and overwhelmed and fearful, respond like that today. And let God begin the work in you and change your marriage. Let's stand together and respond.